Support for Politics and Public Policy reporting on SDPB is made possible by SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We turn our attention now to politics in Sioux Falls with an eye to how the race for mayor resonates with the rest of the state. And then we'll also talk about the Noam Jackley Forum as well. Joining us for the Dakota Political Junkies, we have Jonathan Ellis. He's a reporter and columnist for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Hey, Jonathan. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here, Lori.
And Dana Ferguson is with us as well from the Argus Leader. Hi, Dana.
Hey, Lori.
It's possible that neither one of you has had any sleep, so hopefully you have your caffeine ready for today. And Jonathan, let's start with this mayor's race, because Paul Ten Haken defeats Jolene Letcher pretty handily. And you wrote a column about sort of what you think went wrong in Letcher's campaign in the days up to the runoff election. You want to give us a recap of that?
Well, sure. I mean, she had, and I should emphasize, these are nonpartisan races, so they don't run as Democrats or Republicans, but in practice they kind of do, especially mm-hmm. in the last couple of elections. Democrats have united behind a single candidate. First it was Mike Huether in 2010, and then Jolene in this latest election. And it's enough to get you into a runoff, the top two finishers. And so she made the runoff, and then she kind of had some limited choices, I think, in how to approach the campaign in the final 3 weeks. And those choices were basically to kind of just run as she had been running, a very positive, upbeat campaign. I don't know that would have moved the needle a whole lot in terms of capturing, you know, new voters. She probably could have tried to expand the pie of voters, keeping in mind that only about 27%, you know, voters turned out in the first election. So there was a vast reservoir of voters if you could try to get to try to encourage them to turn out. But that's something that takes time and money. And then I think the third option she had was to go negative. Going negative isn't necessarily a bad. I mean, if you can contrast certain issues that you have with your opponent, that's not necessarily a bad thing. However, the way that the campaign handled this really turned out to be a misstep. I can certainly happy to go into details, but there was a voicemail that Paul had left her back in March, and her campaign allowed journalists to hear it, but would only agree to allowing just a small snippet of that be used for newscasts. And so, you know, the Argus Leader refused to do that, believing that the entire voicemail provided the appropriate context. And so eventually she did release or make available the entire voicemail. And actually, for people who listened to it, most people, I think, who were coming at it unbiasedly felt that there was no threat that Paul had left. You know, she'd accused him of threatening him, and that most people who listened to that, I think, came across thinking that she had maybe stretched the truth or mischaracterized the voicemail that Paul had left. So that was the big misstep, I think, in that campaign. And it was coupled with some other things that kind of just went wrong with her as well.
Let's talk a little bit about this notion of nonpartisan ship in this particular race. And Dana, you were at the McGovern Day dinner, weren't you? And Letcher showed up and spoke. Tell us about what she said to that crowd.
Sure. And that was on Saturday. So at that time, Jolene got up on stage and said, you know, my opponent, Paul Ten Haken, has been endorsed by the state Republican Party. The Republican Party has made it pretty clear that they are going to be backing him. And so she essentially told the audience there that she didn't feel a need to hide her party affiliation, despite it being a nonpartisan race. She made a couple of jokes about the voicemail, about various issues that had gone on in that sort of troublesome week for her, and essentially played to her base, reiterated her support for the LGBTQ community, said she wasn't going to back down on that, and maintained that she was a fighter, she wasn't a victim, and she was very well received there, but I don't know that the folks in that room were the people she needed to win over. They likely voted for her the first time around.
Right. She doesn't need to win them over now, but is she trying to win them over for the future? I'm wondering. Jonathan, do you have thoughts on what's next for Jolene Letcher during her concession speech? She said, I'm not done. I did a sprint marathon to the finish, to the starting line.
Yeah, I mean, she's been involved in public policy issues. I mean, this is, I think, their first venture into politics, and she's articulate. I've known her for a long time. She's smart. She ran a very interesting, energetic campaign that when she first announced, most people, I think, thought, well, what's she doing? She doesn't have any experience here. But if you saw, I mean, her videos, her social media, and I should point out this on the social media front, Paul's campaign also was very active there. I think they two most active campaigns made it to that runoff. But so I would expect her to reemerge as in politics at some point. I think that had she been able to pull off this negative, you know, had things gone better for her in this final week, and even if she lost, I think her, you know, she would be better positioned. As it stands now, I think, you know, she's probably got to take a deep breath and maybe take a little time off. But yeah, I would be surprised if she doesn't. I mean, she's, you know, under 40. She's, you know, again, articulate, smart. She's obviously very passionate, and so you would expect somebody like that to reemerge in the political scene.
I want to play a little bit from her concession speech, and this, she first starts out by talking about what's, you know, next for her and that she's not done yet. And then she says this to the people who are gathered here. Take a listen.
It's also so important that we talk about what is next for all of you. Your service does not end here either. Keep volunteering. We have incredible candidates that are running for office and will be on the ballot in June and November. All across the state, focus on those elections too. Join them. Register everyone you know to vote. And start asking yourself, maybe I should be on the ballot too. The best way to fight for the voices that we know deserve to be heard is to step into the ring ourselves.
And Dana, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about the McGovern Day dinner and on Saturday, and sort of this overall message that we're hearing from Democrats saying we want a blue wave to come through the state.
Right. Well, that message was pretty clear. On Saturday, we saw Ann Tornberg, who's the chair of the Democratic Party, get up and say, you know, it's very likely that we could see the support for Democratic candidates here in South Dakota that other states have seen in special elections over the past few months. But she acknowledged it's not going to be a deep blue wave election as some other states might see. It might be a muddier sort of blue is what she said. And she acknowledged that if that is going to happen, the party volunteers and others are going to have to really work for it. Obviously, voter registration numbers bear that out, and suggest that if Democrats want to have any sort of wave election, they're going to have to get out. They're going to have to register many voters or get Republicans or independents or non-affiliated voters to flip. It's possible that some of Jolene's supporters who are not already Democrats will now feel potentially more connected to that cause. But I don't know to what degree that would help legislative candidates, statewide candidates, or others. And I'm not sure to what degree it expands a voter pool beyond a base that likely was already there for them.
Right. I have another audio clip here, and this is former Senator Tom Daschle. He was on the show earlier this week talking about this initiative called Rural Forward, which was looking at rural communities and figuring out how to make that connection between Democrats' message. And we were talking about why it matters to have a two-party system in your state, which he feels pretty strongly about. And I asked him, you know, what does it look like? How do you know that you're there? Here's what he had to say.
A choice. When you really feel like you've got an opportunity to make a selection for a candidate, and there's a real chance that that both of them can win. Right now, I think the conventional wisdom is Republicans are going to win 90 or 95% of the races in South Dakota, and it didn't used to be that way, and I would even think a lot of Republicans would say we're a better party if we're held to a more competitive state of play, and so I think regardless of whether you're a Democrat in an urban area or a Republican in a rural area, I think competition makes us better candidates and better office holders. And so that's, I think, how a voter would tell. Do I have a real choice? And is that choice an option that, that could mean either candidate could win?
And Jonathan, I want to talk about Ten Haken and Letcher quickly, and then we'll maybe expand this conversation to, say, Jackley and Noem. Jonathan, what do you think? Do you think voters really looked at their ballots and said, hey, I've got a real choice here between these two candidates, and did Letcher help make Ten Haken a better candidate and therefore a better mayor?
I would agree with you that there were very different choices on between the two of them. I mean, going back to that 2010 race, Mike Huther was sort of the chosen Democratic candidate, but he was not up front about that. It was sort of under the radar. Jolene was very out front about running on Democratic issues, embracing Democratic issues throughout the campaign. And Paul Ten Haken is viewed as sort of a conservative Christian. So you had very different choices on the ballot. Did that make him a better candidate? I don't know. I don't know if that made him a better candidate. And certainly would not say anything about him being a better mayor because of that. But clearly, voters had a pretty distinct choice in the runoff election between the two of them.
What kind of mayor will he be for Sioux Falls?
Boy, these predictions. Mayor Mike Huther came into office saying he was going to be the most transparent mayor in the history of Christendom, and he's proven to be anything but. He's a competitive guy. Okay, I mean, he's a guy who participates in Ironman, triathlons, those kind of things. He's very athletic, so that tells you something about his inner spirit. He's competitive. He's a guy who built his own business, a very successful business. So there's that. But there are a lot of concerns for both of these candidates that I'd heard that people were a little, they're younger. Did they have the experience? Do they have the chops to get into office? So it'll be fun. I think he's gonna grow in the office. I think everybody does, but particularly him, being that he is coming at this without government experience, and he's younger. So it'll be fun to watch, and hopefully we don't have to hide under our desks.
Dana, do you think from a statewide perspective we're going to start seeing younger candidates from outside, who don't have the resumes that maybe we're used to, and as more and more people are inspired to kind of get in the ring?
I think we will, and I think we're starting to see that as legislative candidates file. We're seeing a lot of first-time candidates come out, people who've not had any sort of background in politics or in elected office. And I think that'll bring some new conversation to many races that maybe haven't seen new faces in a while, have seen some of the same candidates or incumbents run again and again. I imagine that seeing two candidates for mayor come out too, who really haven't had a lot of political experience, emerge as the top two, and then as the winner in this situation, can only inspire more people to throw their hats in the ring if that's something they're interested in, or get involved in a campaign, volunteer. It sounded last night like a lot of people were involved in these campaigns that maybe haven't done that before. And I would guess we'll see more of that in coming years.
And Dana, let's talk about the forum last night between gubernatorial candidates, Kristi Noem and Marty Jackley, who have a lot in common. what transpired last night as far as what they have in common and what distinguishes them?
Sure. So for those who aren't up to speed on it. Americans for Prosperity held a forum last night between Attorney General Marty Jackley and Congresswoman Kristi Noem. Overall, there were quite a few answers that were pretty similar. We heard a lot of ideas that both candidates seem to agree on. They both want to improve economic development in the state. They want to expand access to mental health care. They want to improve transparency, which obviously is exciting news for reporters that we're seeing essentially all gubernatorial candidates say that. But they split on a couple little things where Marty Jackley said he would be interested in hiring or bringing on volunteer task forces to look at issues that might be relevant and consider legislative changes that way. Kristi Noem has said she doesn't intend to do that. She said she won't establish any sort of new boards or task forces like the Blue Ribbon Task Force. And there were some little rifts over the way that things were framed. Marty Jackley, on multiple occasions, took issue with Washington, with the federal government, essentially tried to tie Kristi Noem to some of the issues that he saw in Washington and sort of tried to make her at fault for some of those shortcomings. She responded to that and said, you know, you can try to sling all this mud at me and sling it about Washington, but it's not going to stick. Voters know where I stand on these issues. And she sort of brought her own indirect insult, saying, you know, if you vote for me, I'm not the status quo, sort of insinuating that her opponent would be. To what degree people want to maintain the status quo, I guess we're going to find out in the next couple of weeks. But some subtle jabs, but very likely something we're going to see more of in the weeks leading up to the primary.
Jonathan, your thoughts on some of those, you know, some of that conversation about, you know, who's the outsider, who's the status quo, who, you know, how this is being positioned by different campaigns?
Well, yeah, I mean, Marty Jackley is being careful not to, like, go after her in a way that's negative, I guess, but to go after Washington, which by implication is going after her as being part of the Washington establishment, which we all know nobody likes. And then, of course, I think he's got his own issue of being sort of the peer candidate, which she's trying to paint him with that. I should say that, you know, the Noem campaign had an interesting release on Monday in which they accused Marty Jackley of violating this clean campaign pledge he'd signed last year or whatever, and noted, you know, several what they felt were slights in him breaking this campaign pledge. Basically what that does is it puts the public, or puts us as journalists, and it puts the Jackley campaign on notice, saying now we feel like we can go negative against you. It's almost like putting the finger on the nuclear button. So, you know, this has been a fairly calm campaign. I suspect that in the next few weeks, maybe there's a chance that it gets more raucous. But that was an interesting release on Monday from the Noem campaign, basically saying we're ready to go after you now. So
I just wonder what, you know, what's considered a negative campaign and what's considered mudslinging versus just campaigning and distinguishing yourself. Dana, do you have thoughts on that? Like, is it just another tactic for candidates to sort of use against each other? Well, you're getting, you know, you're getting negative, you're going negative, and I'm not. But yet it's just people calling each other and you know, talking to the voters. What's the difference?
I suppose it depends on the candidate and their sensitivity level, as well as that of the voters to perceive, you know, if you call into question somebody's voting record and you're not saying anything insulting about it, just raising that issue.
Right.
I think people would agree, you know, that's not any sort of slight. It's just pointing to, hey, you did vote on this way, or you brought this case this way, and so we'd like some answers on that. I think mudslinging will be more, I don't know if it'll rise to the level of name calling, But there might be efforts to tie each of them to more of the establishments in which they work. So I'm sure we'll see the Attorney General try to tie Kristi Noem to Congress, which does not have the best polling numbers right now. And I'm sure that we'll see Kristi Noem try to tie Jackley to corruption in Pierre, if that's possible. And obviously, we're going to hear both of them fight back on those efforts to lump them in with the groups they work with. But it's unclear what that's going to look like, what we might be hearing in the next couple of weeks. I think for a while, people have been expecting this race to get a little out of hand, and it hasn't really reached that point yet. But again, it's a matter of weeks at this point, so they've got to break out somehow.
Right, right. How about that House race? Is that shaking up at all? Is that pretty quiet as well?
It's been extraordinarily quiet.
Yeah.
We haven't really heard very much from the candidates beyond them doing their standard campaigning across the state. I've had at least one candidate sit down with me. I'm talking to the other two today and tomorrow. To talk a little bit more about their stances on various issues, but you've really not seen a lot of dirty campaigning there. I suppose we had some back last year prior to the legislative session, but again, things have remained really quiet. There's certainly a potential for that to heat up ahead of the primary. I would expect that as candidates begin meeting head-to-head in forums or in debates, but for now it's pretty silent.
Jonathan, I don't watch a lot of TV, but I did see a Dusty Johnson television ad the other day, and he was positively sunshiny. I mean, there was nothing about the other candidates. It was just simply about the positive things he could bring to the state. Is that what you're seeing from all of them right now? Is just you know, kind of the early stages of this?
Yeah, well, that's kind of politics 101. I mean, you start off with the light touch, the bio ad, the kind of reintroducing yourself to voters. You don't come out of the gate with your double-barreled shotgun going after the other people. So, you know, and you wait and you hold off. I mean, I mean, a lot of the campaigns don't necessarily want to go negative if they don't have to.
Right.
If Dusty has some polling data that shows him maybe with a comfortable lead, maybe he doesn't unless he starts getting hit. So, you talk about that race. I think, Dusty and Chantel Krebs have money to make this sprint to the finish line, so we'll probably hear a lot more out of them as we get closer to the primary. Neil Tapio has indicated to me that he's willing to spend, you know, as much money as it takes, as his own money as it takes to get his message out. So I really think as we, as we get into May here, and we're 5 weeks away basically from the primary, that we'll be getting a lot more action here on both of those races.
We will start counting it down. Jonathan Ellis, Dana Ferguson, thank you so much. You can find both their work at argusleader.com. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Lori.